welcome to episode 22 of the DFA podcast. I am your regular host, Brian Grosnick. Joining me today, as usual, my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, how's it going, man?
I believe that makes me the irregular host, Brian.
You are irregular. That is correct. I would definitely agree with that. Our faithful producer, Sean Brody, is not able to join us today. He immediately, after we said nice things about him on the previous episode, decided to quit. No, just kidding. He's recovering from wisdom tooth removal, so get better soon, Sean, but we don't trust you to produce the show while high. We'll see you next week on our next episode. But we have good news. We have a guest joining us today. So joining us to talk about a couple of team-specific moves is Jarrett Seidler of Baseball Prospectus and Baseball Prospectus Mets. Jarrett, thanks so much for joining.
No problem. Sean writes for BP Mets sometimes, so, I'm just a nice fill-in.
Yeah, we do kind of have a little bit of a Mets bias on this show, and by a little bit, I mean a lot, poor RJ. But, the Mets are interesting now, so we got to kind of talk about them and do a Mets-specific show, and there's no one better to talk about that sort of thing than you. So let's jump in and talk about our big move for the episode, the one big waiver wire trade, post-waiver deadline trade that's been made so far was the Mets trading Jay Bruce to the Indians for relief pitcher Ryder Ryan, who has a very Marvel Comics fake-sounding name. So Ryder Ryan comes back to the Mets. Jay Bruce goes to the Indians. Jared, I want you to talk a little bit about this trade because in a vacuum, it seems kind of crazy that the Mets would trade a ostensibly above-average hitting corner outfielder for a ostensibly lower minors middle relief prospect that nobody cares about. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the Mets' return here and what this kind of plan that they seem to be executing on looks like.
I don't think the Mets' return here is Ryder Ryan so much as salary relief on the rest of Jay Bruce's contract.
Very fair.
Ryder Ryan was a 30th round draft pick last year out of the University of North Carolina. So 16-15. So he had basically not pitched in college. He was their seventh infielder. He was something of an interesting prep prospect as a right-handed pitcher, third baseman type going to North Carolina, but he was considered unsignable out of the draft way back when, and he went to North Carolina and basically did nothing for a couple of years. And the Indians popped him and converted him back to pitching.
Interesting.
But, now all of a sudden he's a 23-year-old pitcher in A-ball who has a 4.7 ERA and was a 30th-round college relief draft pick. So there's not a lot of value here. I have not personally seen the Lake County captains this year, but I talked to a couple people that did. And he's pretty much your usual, we call them 95 and a slider relievers that populate many bullpens in the minor leagues. These guys absolutely have a chance to make the major leagues. He could even be a good major league pitcher in 2 or 3 years, but there's not a lot of value there. And every team has 10 or 15 of these guys, except weirdly the Mets, who have been unable to draft and develop them, and have thus have to trade for Ryder Ryan and Gerson Bautista and Steven Nogasek and all. They've now traded for, six of these guys at the deadline. And yeah, that's all they've traded for.
That was going to be my follow-up. It seems like the Mets have really prioritized acquiring minor league relievers this deadline season. And I was going to ask whether you think that's intentional, part of a strategy, or if it's just a happy coincidence.
Direct reaction / overreaction to the fact that they did not have any of these guys to call up this year. And instead ended up calling up guys like Chasen Bradford, Tyler Pill, guys that aren't 95 in a slider guys that are 89 in a slider guys, and really just organizational players. They've had to call up a number of organizational pitchers this year just to fill innings because they've been unable to develop these guys within the system and because they've not been very aggressive in getting these guys on waiver claims or non-roster invites or any of that kind of stuff. So they just really didn't have any significant depth in Roll 3 or Roll 4 pitching.
Yeah, it seems like all the trades that the Mets made, they brought back middle relief, maybe late relief pitching prospects, that sort of thing. You mentioned briefly the salary dump aspect of this. So Jay Bruce goes to the Indians. He's looked at as kind of a salary dump. The word on the street is that the Yankees had made an offer for Jay Bruce as well, and that offer consisted of the Mets eating some of Bruce's salary, which is maybe why they didn't make that move. But then there's also rumblings about the Yankees front office and the Mets front office being in like a, I don't know, Hills Laguna Beach style feud of some kind. Like, I don't really know what's going on there about Neil Walker and his medicals. So do you think that this was actually much of a difference based on, you know, the two teams, or is this really about the Mets trying to take back a what we might consider a quote lesser return in exchange for eating some of this salary? What how do you kind of see it right now?
So is Brian Cashman LC in this situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So I guess what happened is the Yankees were attempting to trade for Neil Walker at the waiver trade deadline on the July 31st deadline, which is, I guess, actually August 1st this year. And that deal fell apart. I guess Neil Walker failed his physical, or Neil Walker's medicals did not pass the Yankees muster. I'm not sure whether there was a separate physical taken. The Mets thought that this was like a Peter Angelos tanking of the trade where they just wanted to back out late as opposed to an actual failed physical.
I see.
So there's, at least that's what they've been leaking the last couple days, whereas the Yankees have been leaking. We pretty much thought we had a the Yankees are ignoring the Neil Walker aspect and have been leaking, well, we pretty much thought we had a deal for Jay Bruce, and then all of a sudden we turned on SportsCenter and he was an Indian. So I don't know if there's any retaliation. I don't know. You know, Brian Cashman and Sandy Alderson certainly have certain reputations within the industry. You can kind of take that for, you can take whoever's word you want based on what you think of those two individuals. I don't really know. The Mets have they refused to pick up money on Lucas Duda. They refused to pick up money on Addison Reed. They've reportedly refused to pick up money on Estrubel Cabrera. To me, it just seems like they want to get rid of the money. And we all know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're aware of the Mets ownership situation, of their perceived cheapness, of the Bernie Madoff stuff. This is not out of character for them in the past to just want to go dump money and take lesser returns because of it.
Biggest market in baseball, 13th highest payroll, I think, and falling. So they'll have a lot of money coming off the books in 2017. RJ, I'll switch over to you real briefly because I think we can talk a little bit for the, you know, like Indians fan or two fans that are probably listening to this about Jay Bruce. What are the Indians getting in Bruce? Do you think this is a good addition for him?
I do think it's a good addition for him. You look at the opportunity cost and it's hard to beat that. And in addition to that, you know, Michael Brantley went down and Bruce gives them not only some power that they didn't really have in their outfield, but if you look at his seasonal numbers, he's outperformed Brantley this year. And he's a free agent to be, so it's not like you have some long-term concern about how he fits into their plans. So, you know, I'm of the opinion that Indians team's being slept on a little bit. I think they're going to eventually shake off whatever has been causing them to be a little inconsistent this season. Lindor is going to play better than he has. Kipnis, too. And I think that's a team that we're probably overlooking in the American League. I know all of the attention, or most of the attention anyway, is on Houston and even Boston, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Indians repeat as AL champions. What about you, Brian?
I mean, I think this is a good move for them. I kind of see this more as replacing Lonnie Chisenhall, actually, than Michael Brantley, although Brantley was the recent injury. Chisenhall had been hitting really well this year. He's another left-handed bat, which, you know, the Indians, again, like Brantley. But it's kind of another interesting situation comparing him to Chisenhall because we don't have a really great sense of Chisenhall's defense anymore, and defense has always kind of been a red mark on Bruce's ledger. Now, this year, things have been a little bit different. The statistical metrics, which we're not supposed to use in small samples, but hey, it's all we got, tell us that Bruce has actually been maybe average or maybe even slightly above average in right field, which doesn't sound right. So I'm going to throw this to you, Jarrett. Being a talent evaluator and being somebody who's seen a lot of Mets games this year, does Bruce look any better in right field than he has in the past, or is this pretty much the same old, and an artifact of, you know, small samples and questionable defensive data?
my season ticket plan is in right field. He still looks like Jay Bruce.
Okay, good.
Like, he's Jay Bruce. You know, the Mets will tell you that he's been a little bit better positioned this year, that maybe he's bought in a little bit more to their overall overarching team defense. But at the same time that Jay Bruce's individual numbers have ticked up, the Mets have had the worst defense in baseball on a team basis by far. So I don't know whether we really want to go crediting historically bad players with improving their defense on, like, a historically bad defense.
Yes.
Overall.
That's probably very smart. He'll probably benefit a lot from playing next to Bradley Zimmer instead of playing next to Michael Conforto and or Curtis Granderson and or whomever they can kind of find to not play good center field defense in Flushing the way it's been this year. So Bruce is out in New York, but we got some new guys in. Today's Friday, the day that we're recording. We're expecting Dominic Smith to join the Mets. And Jared, of course, you wrote him up for the call-up for Baseball Prospectus. You absolutely have not had that piece in the can for a while with Smith ready to come up to the majors. Talk a little bit about the Mets' new first baseman, what we can expect, and if we should just assume that he's going to hit just as well as he did in AAA for the Mets this year.
I sure hope he hits like 330 with doubles power, because that would be really good. He's kind of like almost like a 1980s, early 1990s first baseman, in which that he's very average and hit tool driven. I don't know if he's ever going to be like a 20-25 home run hitter. He might be. There's some raw power there, and hell, everybody hits 25 home runs now, so
that's a good
point. It like wouldn't totally shock me if he just starts like pulling him over the short porch out there. We have not been as high on him as other outlets have, and I think that's mostly in recognition. Another first baseman, the Phillies just called up Rhys Hoskins, who's kind of a different package but kind of a similar overall value type player to Dominic Smith. The problem with these guys is you look at it and there's like 20 to 22 first basemen in baseball that are like 15 or 20% above league average offensively. So that's like the baseline to be like a major league average first baseman now. And it's really hard to actually hit that well. And it's hard to project these guys to hit that well based on profiles that are good but flawed, or but not like super elite offensive profiles. Like, this is not like Cody Bellinger had like a super elite offensive profile as a prospect. Even Josh Bell did, and Josh Bell hasn't done quite as well in the majors. So it's kind of like hard. Like, Dominic Smith could hit like 290 and still be like a below average major league first baseman, which is just a recognition of where kind of like first base has gone in the past 5 years.
So, RJ, as somebody who's followed the Rays for years and years, you're used to below-average first baseman. They throw a James Loney comp on Dom Smith a lot. It's kind of a lazy comp. How do you think Mets fans are going to react if it turns out that Dominic Smith is kind of like, maybe the hit tool comes through, but he doesn't have the power like Jarrett says? I mean, they weren't happy with Lucas Duda, and Lucas Duda was, you know, actually better than 20% better than the league average offensively and could hit some dingers. What do you think the future is going to be at first base for the Mets, and how things might go for Smith?
I assume the future is Smith, but I would say, are Mets fans ever really happy?
No.
Like, even when they're happy, I feel like it's with that pretense that, you know what, any second now it's going to go completely left on us and we're not going to be happy for long. And yeah, the Duda dislike is kind of weird to me. Did they dislike Ike Davis from the jump? Because I feel like yes, but I might be misremembering.
And Ike Davis is the reason that there's Duda dislike, because I think the Met fan, at least the like WFAN caller Met fan, was like really sold on Ike Davis, and they kept like shoving Ike Davis aside for Duda, even though by the end it was very clear that Duda was actually the superior player.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, Davis was sort of the inverse of Smith, right? He had that one big season where he hit, 37 home runs, and he was above average, but he wasn't as far above average as you would think based on that power production. So I suppose that's a nice little inverse of potentially what Smith could offer. I would say, though, that I'm kind of more interested in the other youngster the Mets have brought up, more so than Smith. Ryan, is that working as a segue to you to talk about Ahmed Rosario, or
sure,
do you want to continue to talk about Smith?
No, all right, I think so, there will be a lot of time for Dominic Smith in the future, so we can move on to the more interesting Mets infielder.
Yeah, I was just going to say, okay, so you're more familiar with Rosario, Jarrett. Should we be concerned about his strikeouts so far? I believe he's fanned 11 times in 31 at-bats, has not drawn a walk. Are there any concerns about his approach at the plate, or is this just a matter of a young player making some adjustments or needing to make some adjustments during his first big league cameo?
So I'm going to answer this question two ways. It's 31 at-bats. Who cares? Like, I mean, that's where you're still like 50 at-bats away from like Voros's law range, where like anybody can hit anything in, you know, what's essentially a week and a half. That being said, if there was a hole in the offensive profile, it was that he tends to get over-aggressive at the plate, starts to swing at pitches he can't actually make contact with, makes weak contact, starts swinging through, like, you know, the high and outside fastball, that kind of stuff. So this could be representative of, if it does end up not going great initially, this would be why it wouldn't go great. But it's way too early to make that kind of prediction, in my opinion. You know, it's his first 2 weeks in the majors. I'm not going to go super crazy. He's certainly, from a visual standpoint, he looks the part, especially on defense.
Yeah, that's been kind of a surprising thing. I mean, you know, he hasn't gotten very many hits since he's been up, but two of them have been triples. He's shown that he's a really interesting base runner. But the defense is kind of what we expected to be his calling card, which is kind of interesting given it wasn't really in the picture. Is he wasn't, when he was first picked up by the Mets, he wasn't actually looked at as a super high-end defensive prospect. But now he's looked pretty sharp so far in the short action, right?
Right. So if you go back to like when he was initially signed at 16 out of the Dominican Republic, like the projection was like power hitting third baseman, and instead he's like defense and speed shortstop, which just shows you how much these things can change over 5 or 6 years when these players get into the system. The body doesn't always develop how you think it does. Rosario in specific gained a lot of speed and athleticism when he started working with the major league strength and conditioning staff, all the Mike Barber stuff that's been fairly controversial within like the greater Mets community, is like Noah Syndergaard and Yoenis Cespedes have become like workout monsters and started pulling stuff. But Rosario, on the other hand, gained like 2 to 2.5 grades of speed and became a much better defender and much more overall athletic working in that kind of training environment. So, yeah, this isn't like really what we would have expected from him 3 or 4 years ago, but it kind of has been the profile for the last year or two. At the time he was called up, we would have ranked him as the best prospect in baseball. We ranked him number 2 in midseason behind Yan Moncada, who came up ahead of him. So we really do expect him to be a star to superstar shortstop. Now, is it possible that he's a little bit less than that? Yeah, he could be Alcides Escobar too, but hey, Alcides Escobar is actually not a bad, you know, it's a good player.
I'm so happy you threw that Alcides Escobar comp on him. That's the one that I always keep in mind in my own head, because a lot of people, you know, are kind of indifferent to Escobar, but it turns out Escobar is pretty valuable. You want to have an average shortstop at you know, that level. So that's what makes me kind of want to look at this from a holistic perspective. So the Mets have, you know, half a new infield. The season didn't go quite the way people planned. So I want to take a look at this from an insider-outsider perspective towards kind of looking towards 2018. So I'll start with the outsider perspective with RJ. Where do you think this team is going in 2018? And do you think that they're going to be ready to compete next year? Or do you think that there's a little bit too much up in the air to try to make that decision? Or do you think that this team is maybe working itself out of a window to contention as they go to this kind of more of a youth movement?
My assumption is they're going to try to compete. I don't think you're going to see them rebuild at this point. I don't even know if they really have a ton to rebuild, because, you know, their best assets are primarily on the pitching side, and a lot of those guys have dealt with injuries. I don't think they're going to, you know, trade anyone of note. In terms of rebuilding, I could see them perhaps trying to make a trade to acquire talent, but I don't think they're going to go through like a fire sale or anything like that. That said, you know, they definitely need an infusion of talent. They have to stop with this Jose Reyes obsession. I don't understand it. I haven't understood it since it started. I assume they're going to try to make an effort to bring back, if not Walker, at least, you know, try to find a couple of number infielders. And, you know, Conforto seems to be like the prized possession of that lineup, even with Cespedes around. And I don't know. They obviously have to do something with the training staff, too. They've been a mess for as long as I can remember, they've been a mess when it comes to injuries. And they don't use the DL well. And even if you blame that on the location of their AAA squad, it's still just a messy situation. They have to fix the bullpen. I know we already talked about that earlier, how they didn't have a lot of good internal options there. But they really are going to have to reconstruct that bullpen on the fly this winter. And I don't know. I suppose I just don't see them rebuilding a hole like that. So I think their ideal offseason is going to be add enough pieces to try and compete. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. I mean, we're sitting here in mid-August trying to project what a team will look like next April, and one with a number of expiring contracts and a number of just completed trades that kind of strip them of their identity. But my expectation is that, yeah, they're going to enter 2018 attempting to compete.
And so, Jarrett, what is it from your perspective? Do you think that with this kind of what's left of a farm system, they have some young talent on the major league roster? They actually have a pretty good chunk of young talent on the major league roster, but there's still some holes, and there's still now there's pretty much nothing left in the minor league system. The cupboard's pretty bare in that regard. It's Andrés Giménez and a cast of, you know, guys who wouldn't be in the top 200 maybe on a prospect list. So how do you see 2018 and maybe beyond that going right now?
Yeah, and the help that's there is not close. You know, Giménez is playing in low A. Really the only guy that's you could in the farm that you could maybe project having an impact on 2018 is Tomas Nido. And I really don't think Tomas Nido in 2018 is better than Travis d'Arnaud.
Mm-hmm.
But Travis d'Arnaud is a pretty controversial player now, I think, within the Mets community, because the things he does well are kind of like hidden value Molina-type things, and the things he does, not Yachty, like Jose Molina and Benji
right.
Molina, and the things he does poorly, like throw, are like really obvious and like hit, and yeah. So he's a good power hitter and a good framer, but, you know. Anyway, yeah, like, you know, they've got pitchers, you know, Justin Dunn and David Peterson are the last two draft picks. Those guys probably aren't helping in 2018. Thomas Zupacki might have helped in 2018. He just had Tommy John surgery. This is a bad farm system. If we're assuming that both Rosario and Smith graduate, and unless one of them gets hurt, that's probably pretty likely that both of them will, you know, get their 150 at-bats by the end of the season. This has a pretty good chance to be a bottom five farm. And it'll have Giménez will probably make our 101, but there's nobody else that's really even going to be in contention. Maybe Peterson. And,
wow.
And so there's not much coming. So they're going to have to go out and make some moves. Now, they have a lot of money coming off, but if you look at it based on, they've sometimes done like some sleight of hand for what they consider like their previous year payroll figures. Their opening day payroll was in like the $155 million range, but their end of season payroll looks like it's going to be closer to $130 or even less. So it's like, which number do they use? Do they imagine did that $25 million just magically go poof? In past years, it just magically went poof. And so I don't know. And that's like the difference between like having Lorenzo Cain in center field and having Jared Dyson in center field. So I don't know, is Jared Dyson even better than Juan Ligares? Who cares at that point?
Right, yeah. The Mets do have a couple of guys like Ligares and TJ Rivera and d'Arnaud where you'd like to upgrade over that, but how do you actually do that when your real assets are, you know, maybe you'll have money to spend in free agency? That's a little bit of a more challenging thing to try to deal with than, oh, we've got some, you know, high talent prospect coming up, or, oh, there's, we have a wonderful trade asset that we could use to go out and get somebody back. I mean, you know, who are the Mets going to trade? Matt Harvey? Nobody's going to want to give up anything of real value for something like that. So yeah, it's a sticky situation to be put in. And then it probably doesn't help them that they do seem to have a challenge facing them in terms of their current manager, maybe lame duck manager, Terry Collins, where players aren't necessarily used to their fullest potential. There was a lot of talk about Conforto sitting, a lot of talk about it in Jarrett Seidler's articles on BP Mets, something that was well covered. But then there's also things like the way he uses the bullpen. And so that leads us to the last transaction that's happened relatively recently, is that the Mets put Fernando Salas, they designate him for assignment, which is interesting because he was really good for them last year. And then all of a sudden seemed to pitch every day and now maybe isn't so good anymore. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, is this about an overuse thing? And if they continue to overuse their bullpen and the few good arms they have in the bullpen, is this going to be like a long-term issue for trying to build that bullpen, even if they do trade for all these guys? And then kind of along with that is like, well, is Terry Collins even going to be around next year? So does it matter too much?
I don't think Collins will be around. If you remember back during the winter, there was some speculation that he was going to retire after the season. And I know from that Baseball Maverick book and other related reports over the years that Alderson doesn't seem like much of a fan of Collins anyway. So I just cannot see a scenario where Collins returns unless ownership forces their hand. But coming off a disappointing season like this, I just have to believe that Collins is going to be out of a gig. And, you know, just to highlight what you said about overuse of the bullpen and all, if you go on Baseball Reference and you look up the amount of appearances made with 0 days rest, the Mets lead the league with 98 such appearances. Second place is the Brewers. They have 88. Only two other teams are in the 80s. So the Mets are by far the most aggressive team when it comes to throwing their pitchers on multiple days in a row, excuse me. And they're actually near the top in multiple innings pitched per relief appearance as well. So not only are the Mets using the relievers a lot within their appearances, they're using them a lot within the scope of consecutive days. And you're right, that's a seemingly a good way to burn out your relievers. And I know there's a lot about reliever usage that we don't know. But when you look at the leaderboards and you see Salas, I believe he was top 15. Let me check just to make sure. Well, okay, he had dropped a little bit since I last checked. But the point is, yeah, it's not too much of a stretch to look at his usage and wonder, well, you know, did they perhaps ruin a good thing here by running him out there too often without enough sufficient rest? But I don't know. I just can't see a scenario where Collins is allowed back to manage his team in 2018.
Jarrett, what do you think?
Craig Calcaterra had a tweet that I'm going to horribly botch here, that like one of the worst things in baseball is trying to figure out like Mets front office and ownership criminology, because there's just like so much going on. I think the manager is an ownership call. It has certainly been hinted in a lot of places that perhaps Terry Collins would not be Sandy Alderson's manager if he were making that call on his own, including in the Baseball Maverick book and including several times on the record, which is always gets you into an interesting situation. There's just some weird usage. Like, if the players that are currently on the roster, the leader for major league plate appearances this season is Jose Reyes.
That's weird.
Like, and Wilmer Flores has been on this roster this entire year. Wilmer Flores is a younger player, a better player, and a similar player to Jose Reyes. And he has like almost 200 less plate appearances. Why? Because Jose Reyes won a batting title for Terry Collins in 2011? Who cares? And that's not even getting into, you know, why Jose Reyes is on the Mets, because you really can't mention this without mentioning that Jose Reyes is on the Mets because he allegedly chokeslammed his wife through a glass door. Excuse me, into a glass door. That has actually come up as a matter of contention on Mets Twitter, whether it was into or through the door, as if that matters.
Right. Yeah, that certainly does not matter. I agree with that. It's strange.
Fernando Salas was used early and often in the season. He was pitching well in April. I recall there was a game within the first couple weeks of the season where it was a blowout game and they put the blowout crappy relievers in. I think it may have been Rafael Montero at the time. And he was getting shelled and who cares. But then Terry Collins just ran in all the setup guys because he got angry that Rafael Montero was pitching badly in like this 9-run game. And he did that several times early in the season. And then all of a sudden, and then he would also use Fernando Salas the next day because he needed him in a setup situation. And Fernando Salas was out of gas on, like, May 10th. And he's really never recovered.
Yeah, that's...
You know, it's a random reliever for Udo. Fernando Salas isn't that good. Fernando Salas is like an average seventh-inning guy type.
I'm going to predict, though, that Fernando Salas will land with the Rays. I've been predicting this for over a year now. He checks all their boxes. You know, they like the rising fastball. There you go. Some deception there. There you go. Former Angel. They just cannot seem to get enough of the former Angel relievers. So that's my prediction, that Fernando Salas is not done as a Major League reliever. He'll land with the Rays, and then he'll probably be done as a Major League reliever. The Jay Watasik Memorial Tour, what have you. So that's my prediction. What about you, Brian? Is Fernando Salas done as a Major Leaguer?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he'll get picked up, and even if he doesn't get picked up after the DFA, if they wind up sending him down to AAA, it's not like this is a team that's not going to use him in the future, because, one, they love to bring back their old players, and two, the other options are bad, and they can't get four relievers this offseason, I don't think, four major league relievers. Obviously, they can get as many minor league relievers as they want, because that's all they seem to want. But yeah, I don't think there's any chance that he's out of baseball unless he's injured. It's just very interesting to me, because I tend to worry now a little bit that Jerry Blevins might have some of the same situation coming, because he was burned out pretty hard too, I felt like. He's appeared in more games than Salas has this year. Granted, Blevins never seems to pitch for as long. He's usually the traditional kind of loogie guy, which is kind of weird, because he can get he can work pretty hard against same-handed hitters too. But I just kind of worry that, like, you know, since the Mets didn't trade him at the deadline like they did Addison Reed, I was worried about this with Addison Reed too. Like, maybe they want to move on from him because Terry Collins might have broken him or something like that. Though Blevins seems to be pitching pretty well, okay now. Yeah. So how would you?
I was a little surprised if, like, the Astros didn't go and get Blevins if they're looking for a lefty reliever. You know, I know we just talked about that last time, Al, but I really was surprised that Blevins didn't get moved to a team like that.
The Mets' price on Blevins was insanely high compared to what they were selling off everybody else for. They do not feel that they can get an adequate replacement for him in 2017-2018 free agency for anywhere near what they're paying for him, assuming they pick up his option, which, unless his arm falls off. Unless his arm falls off, they're going to. You know, they're assuming that the relief market's going to explode in the offseason again, which is also why they trade for AJ Ramos. They're like, really weirdly obsessed with, like, cost certainty, especially in the bullpen.
Well, good thing that they've got Hansel Robles and AJ Ramos and now Jerry Blevins coming back for next year, and maybe even Fernando Salas. Yeah, they better go out and get two or three more relievers if they want to do something next year of worth.
There is, you know, I almost think they should be going after starting pitchers and bumping guys like Seth Lugo and Robert Gsellman back into the bullpen, where they perhaps profile a little bit better than they do as middle or back rotation guys. I don't know if they can actually go out and get, like, three major league starting pitchers either. That's kind of a tough ask, too.
I just want to make sure. I want to check on something real quick. Are you advocating that the Mets move Robert Gsellman into the bullpen? Because I wonder if that kind of talk would get your podcast co-host Jeffrey Paternostro to disown you or something like that.
We've actually discussed this at some length. He was briefly used out of the bullpen, and we were actually behind the plate at one of the games where he was used out of the bullpen in, like, April, May, somewhere in there. It was very early on in the season. And he was back to looking like Robert Gsellman. Now, the Robert Gsellman of late 2016 that we perhaps ranked pretty highly on our 101. He's been, I think, hurt for a lot of the year. He's perhaps pitching through some injuries that they were not. You know, there were definitely rumblings that he was hurt earlier on in the year, and then obviously he was pitching through various stuff later on before he went on the DL. Mm-hmm. You know, I still think he's got a chance to be a pretty good major league starting pitcher, but there was always, like, the possibility that this was, like, going to end up being, like, a fastball slider bullpen arm, too. And I think he's got a chance to be, like, a setup guy or a closer in that role. And if we're worried about his health, his reliability, all of that stuff, you know, go out and sign you Darvish. Like, what the hell? sign you Darvish, and then all of a sudden Gesellman or Lugo's in your bullpen, and you've killed two birds with one, you know, $220 million signing.
Oh, yeah, that's easier said than done, but a wonderful thought to bring you Darvish to New York. I just, I love the idea that I can't imagine how Robert Gesellman could be maybe pitching through an injury given, you know, Dan Worthen's reputation. And it's just mystifying that somebody who's a starting pitcher with the Mets might have a little bit of an injury issue that they have to work through, because one, more than the pitching coach has that reputation as a shredder, and two, because the Mets training staff and disabled list usage is not, you could say it's not ideal, but what it is weird and kind of gross. So
I know Matt Harvey is going on rehab assignment tomorrow. They haven't actually said whether he's back to being able to feel his fingers or not.
Jeez.
I mean, I assume he can, but he apparently wasn't able to for like most of the last year and a half, so a lot.
Yeah, and you would have hoped the thoracic outlet recovery would help him with that, because that's literally pretty much the entire point of it, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Any final parting thoughts from you, RJ, on the Mets? And thank you for bearing with us as part of this discussion. But anything else you want to go over with Jarrett while we've got him?
I'm just ready to get out of this hellscape that is a Mets-specific episode.
I was going to say, it could be worse. We could be talking about the Marlins or
Let's
the Phillies.
Let's talk about Tim Beckham some more. Let's give my man Tim Beckham some credit.
Yeah, that's the content that fans of the show are really itching for, is us to go for another 20 minutes on Tim Beckham.
Ryan Garten.
Yeah,
hey, we could be talking about Tim Tebow instead.
I mean, I have some Tim Tebow stuff. I was going to bring him up as a joke, but now that we've introduced him, we should... Oh, what's that? We're gonna cut the feed now. Oh,
yeah,
sorry, folks.
Sorry, that's all the time we've got today. No, Jarrett, is there any final things you've got to say about the Mets while we're lucky enough to have you on the show?
You know, it's really kind of like I can see how this has been an interesting team to look at from the outside for like the last month or so. But God, this has just like been horrible baseball to watch since like I would say about mid-June. It's just like trudging like through like these horrible, largely unlikable veterans, mm-hmm. Playing middling to poor baseball, and it just sucks. And it'll suck less now that Rosario and Smith are up, and they're. But you know, he's still got like Jose Reyes out there and Esdrubal Cabrera, and
it's just one of those kind of funny things, because I absolutely do not want to say that home runs are bad, but this is a team that's not a very like rally prone team on offense. They do hit a lot of home runs. A lot of the way that they generate their offense is through their power, and it works for the most part. I mean, they're not a bad offensive team, but it's not fun to watch when you just have like OJ Bruce gets up and he either strikes out or hits a dinger. And Conforto's great. He's fun to watch. Yeah. Cespedes will never not be fun to watch. But yeah, I kind of like the idea that with Rosario and Smith, who are two guys who ostensibly have some better hit tools, you know, may get some more interesting offense to watch, if not exactly better.
I'm going to briefly recycle a Twitter joke that I had a couple of weeks ago, which is that my decision to watch a Mets game on any given night has largely been, Alexa, is Jacob DeGrom pitching tonight?
Yeah, the one good starting pitcher left on the team with Steven Matz not looking especially Steven Matz like. But man, we could have a whole thing about Jacob DeGrom and how underserved he is in the greater baseball community, even with his luscious hair and being the only good starter on this interesting Mets team. So, Jarrett, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate having you on and taking the time to do it. So, anything you want to plug before we let you go?
You know, we have a podcast on BP Mets, myself and Jeffrey Paternostro, which is nominally Mets-based, but usually we end up talking about, I don't know, other baseball, professional wrestling, music, travel, whatever. I write a weekly-ish column on the BP main site and also a bunch of other stuff as needed. So,
yeah, including that call up on Dominic Smith, and I believe you were the transaction analyst on the return for was it Ryder Ryan as part of that Jay Bruce trade? So lots of good
That was actually our BP Mets intern Skyler had that one because he had actually somehow seen this dude at some point or another.
Bummer. I was hoping I would be on top of things this time.
I did have the call ups for Rosario, Hoskins, and Smith over the last couple of days.
Wow, that's a lot of work, man. You're really getting out there and doing a lot of stuff for the main site, and it's all good, and we'll definitely link to the Dominic Smith call-up in addition to the Rosario call-up, so we'll have some links in the show post about what Jarrett's writing about. So, again,
just don't let them Jerry Blevins you or Fernando Salas you. Get some rest in there. No zero. Don't lead the league in 0 days rest. That's the main takeaway here.
Excellent advice, RJ. And as usual, you can find RJ at CBS Sports, where he's working on all sorts of great stuff. You can find me at BP. But thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you guys next week.